AgBioScience is supported by Indiana Farm Bureau.
But we have to be less defensive in agriculture. We do amazing things, but only 1.5% of the population's on a farm. And unfortunately, the people that are typically out there farming would prefer to work with the land and their animals than human beings, right? So when you look at opportunities around telling agriculture's story, it's about those personal conversations.
Welcome to AgBioScience, the number one podcast in the world for innovation in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
Welcome back to AgBioScience. I'm Kayla Chittister, producer of the podcast, and I am here with Kenda, wrestler friend, friend of show, obviously, and founder of KRF Public Relations, this week's guest host of AgBioScience. Kenda, I cannot thank you enough for doing this week's duty of hosting the show.
Well, it was a tough thing to do, not being able to sit down with a trusted friend like Michelle and talk about things I love talking about. Yeah, call me anytime.
That's right. You had Michelle Payne, Cause Matters Corp, here with you today. And, you know, I thought if anybody is going to be able to sit down and have this conversation, it would be uniquely the two of you. And it worked.
It worked. Well, we have gone through a lot of similar eras of agriculture, the early days of biotech, the early days of all kinds of things spinning around. And Michelle taught me so much. I'm going to have to go home and think about this quite a bit today in terms of the neuroscience and all the things that are kind of happening back in our brains and how we have to tell the story, how we have to not be defensive and make those emotional connections. And her sitting on a plane with a guy from Amazon and he bought her book. Right? And it's going to think of her when he sees milk. So again, that connectivity, huge, huge,
huge. She has a really cool job.
She does. She made it, right? Yeah. I did too. That's the best thing, right? When you can kind of make your own job and do your thing, it's really helping people with passion.
Being able to storytell what it is that agriculture does from the field all the way to the innovation side is. It's a rewarding thing. We do it on this podcast every single week, right?
Right.
And to be able to take the technical and put it into terms that are relatable for everyone, it's paramount right now.
Right. And it's Michelle's gift to help people do that. There are so many smart scientists within the boundaries of the state of Indiana, but they have to be able to explain what they do in people talk, in real talk. We would, during my corporate days, I would search the hallways for scientists and typically scientific moms. Moms who are scientists, number one trusted source. So if you can talk about how, here's what you feed your kid and here's how you do your science, it's a home run.
I don't think that surprises me at all.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yep. Important.
Well, thank you for coming in. We really do appreciate it. And don't be surprised if you get the call again.
Well, okay, I stand ready.
Please enjoy this week's conversation with Michelle Payne from Cause Matters Corp on AgBioScience.
Well, great. Well, Michelle, you travel all the time and you're always out in the field, so it's great to catch you in a studio.
Yeah, it's exciting to be in Indiana talking.
Right.
And to see you before State Fair.
There's a lot cooking, right?
Yes.
A lot going on. Well, great. Well, we've got a lot to talk about today. And so we'll just kind of jump right in here. So from regulatory pressures to consumers, the food and agriculture system is changing. You've worked in it for a long time. This is not new news. But tell us your kind of boots on the ground, current landscape. What are you hearing from the farmers, the scientists, all the folks that you're out there working with, helping them tell their stories?
The most predominant theme that I hear is uncertainty. Clearly, at a macro level, we see a tremendous amount of change in international trade and shifting policies in commodity prices, as well as consumer acceptance of fun things like seed oils and whatnot. So it's a really challenging time. But I think at a more nuanced level, some of the things that I have heard is a lot of frustration with the mental health issues around agriculture and specifically around youth, unfortunately, as well as the opportunities with AI. And I don't just mean from a practical protocol standpoint, but actually from being able to forecast some of the issues and see where people's minds are around innovation and such. So there's just a tremendous amount going on. The good news is we still get to feed people, right?
That is the good news. See, you have a way with words, right? You always have. And so as you've helped people through this uncertainty with all the trainings and speaking you do, just talk a little bit about what Cause Matters Corp is and does. Tell us about your business.
Sure. Well, 24 years ago in Boone County, Indiana, I founded Cause Matters and work predominantly as a professional speaker and trainer globally. What a lot of people don't know is that I do strategic planning with organizations like Don Lamm at the ISDA. Had the opportunity to work with him and enjoyed that, as well as the Kentucky Agriculture Council. And then I do some hand-selected projects with executive science communications coaching. Worked with Corteva before and had a lot of fun, as well as some local businesses like Freshly Dairy happen to be friends of mine. And so I really enjoy helping them tell their story. But for me, at the end of the day, it's about serving this great business of ours and helping more people understand where their food comes from.
And that's so important. And we know for years, farmers and agri-science and everyone has been trying to get to the consumer, right? How do we get to that person and help them understand where their food comes from? And, you know, really connecting over food, right? We all love talking about food and all those things. So you build bridges from the technical to the practical. So how do you do that? What are some of the biggest gaps you help people try to close?
Sure. Well, I've had the good fortune. I was raised on a dairy farm in Michigan, went to Michigan State University. Go green. I just had to get that in there for all my Boilermaker friends. Sorry. And had the opportunity to work in international dairy genetics, and actually came to Indiana because of the National FFA Foundation, where I developed relationships with people like yourself and Corteva and others in the community and got to know Indiana agriculture. And what I continued to see as I worked across National FFA and the 15 states I managed is that there was a lot of frustration. And this was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. So we're talking quite some time ago. A lot of frustration around the lack of understanding of agriculture, the technology used in it.
The Roundup days had just started, right?
And glyphosate, GMOs were very hot, et cetera, et cetera. Right. And I called on a lot of the crop protection companies, and it was really interesting to me to see the science. My degrees are in animal science and agriculture communications. I worked in the reproductive physiology laboratory at MSU, so I do have a firsthand love of science. And it frustrates me because people don't understand the value of science when we talk about food. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But what I continue to see is that people don't understand how their food is produced. And farmers get very aggravated. I get it. I have dairy cattle out at my front yard. I'm hoping a heifer doesn't calve while I'm here, as a matter of fact. But we have to be less defensive in agriculture. We do amazing things, but only 1.5% of the population's on a farm. And unfortunately, the people that are typically out there farming would prefer to work with the land and their animals than human beings, right? So when you look at opportunities around telling agriculture story, it's about those personal conversations. And it's not just the farmers. I would hold every person who has a vested interest in agriculture, whether you're an agribusiness or whether you're a dietitian, to be able to share the farm and food story more effectively. And I know somebody who's watching may say, well, I've never been on a farm. I can't really speak to that. Well, perhaps not, but you've been in a laboratory and you've created an incredible product, whether it's a bioengineered product, perhaps it's a new technology to use in the field. Tell the story of that on a personal level. So I don't really have secrets, but what I try to focus on, and you can appreciate this from your work at the state fair, is it's a personal conversation.
Yes.
So yeah. As an example, my books and my work have largely focused on connecting with the registered dietitian community. Shout out to all my RDN friends. It's really fascinating to me because when you look at a registered dietitian nutritionist, you wouldn't expect that they would naturally have a connection with farmers.
Right.
Well, my research has clearly shown that their hot buttons are around people wishing that they knew what RDNs actually do, science-based, evidence-based information, and respect for real information. Sounds very familiar, doesn't
it? Wow. Right? Respect for real information.
Yes. And so it's a challenge because many times, and I get this, like somebody, I have Holsteins for those of you who don't know. My daughter and I love pretty black and white cows. And I get very defensive when people start talking what I would call smack about dairy farmers. Because it's insulting. It's insulting at a personal level. But what I have to remind myself to do is to step back and to listen to what that person's really interested in. As a quick example, I was on an airplane with an Amazon executive in Iowa a couple of months ago. And he was at the end of an 18-hour flight from Madrid. I had had delayed flights all day. It was not a good travel day for either one of us. And I rarely talk to people on planes, to be honest with you. We talked the entire way. And at the end of the discussion, I showed him pictures of our cows because he was genuinely curious. He ordered my book, Food Bullying, from Amazon, of course.
Of course.
And then he stood up and he said, I want you to know every time we buy a gallon of milk for our family, I will think of you.
Personal connection.
Every time.
Every time. Yeah. That helping just make it real and personal and not being defensive. And that's so hard. It's hard for us because we're proud of the land and coming from my grandparents were dairy farmers. So, you know, that's the closest I got. But again, just trying to separate the wheat from the chaff, if you will, for consumers like Mr. Amazon who just don't know it, don't see it.
Yeah.
And so things are changing so quickly. I maybe even quicker than, you know, I can recall of times past and different policies and things coming out and reports. And there's just a lot that people have to be nimble on nowadays. As you work with people, how do you help them kind of adapt to this pace of change in a frustrating and kind of uncertain world?
Yeah, it's a little bit crazy, right? You don't know what's coming around the corner next. So the first thing is to make sure that the work that you're doing is of significance, obviously, and that you're personally passionate about, because that's the only thing that's going to keep us all going. But when you look at the issues specifically, one of the tools that I have found incredibly powerful over the last couple of years is AI. And whether it's Perplexity, whether it's ChatGPT, whatever, pick your tool. And for me, I work really hard to make sure that my chat tools don't know who I am and what I do.
Ah, well played.
Because I want to know where the trends are coming. So I'll use seed oil as an example. I had the opportunity to keynote on a stage in Canada 5 days after tariffs were announced.
Oh, geez.
The Canadians
thank
are
goodness
awesome.
They're lovely people. Yeah,
they
so
are
kind.
Wonderful
so
people.
Kind.
We had a good time. And one of the examples that I used was a screenshot from canola. Because obviously in Canada, canola is huge. The same is true for any seed oil. If you're watching and you love soybeans, more power to you. It's the same type of conversation. So what I would do would be to type into Perplexity, I think is what I used at that point. And I said, I'm a canola farmer in Canada. Can you please tell me why people are concerned about canola farming here?
And what did it say?
It brought up a number of issues, some
okay.
of which I'm not going to disclose
right.
because I know we have non-agriculture, but
right.
One of the issues was a particular chemical compound that is used in most seed oil processing.
Sure.
And I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the cool things about our work, right?
Right. We learn every day.
We do. And if you're curious, it's amazing what you can find. Well, I found somebody who has a PhD and has worked in canola her entire career. And I said, what is this? And she said, I don't know.
Wow.
So that's one of the powers of using AI. Another one is considering, and this is a little bit big picture, but looking down the road in 5 years, in 2 years, where are the sources going to come from?
Right.
Where are people who are seeking information going to find information from? I've run probably 50 different examples and have found agriculture listed as a source twice.
Wow.
That terrifies me.
That is horrifying.
And so from my preliminary research, what I've been told by the tech experts is that there's a variety of places that AI bots go out and get the information. When I've asked AI, what it tells me is the National Library of Congress.
Okay.
So I made sure my books were all there, but they're all copyrighted. So my question is, how do you make
sure? How
does
that, yeah.
It listed extension, which was a bit of a surprise. And then it listed a number of other entities, peer-reviewed journals. But at the end of the day, authenticity and volume matters.
Right.
So my question is to everybody who works in the food and agriculture space and the health space, if you want the AI bots to have accurate information, what are you doing?
How are you helping?
To push it out there. And it's the same as the advent of social media. What are you doing to help tell agriculture's story?
Right. The power of amplification and, to your point, putting correct information that can be then part of the discussion.
The big picture. Because for me, it's always about the bigger picture of how the agriculture story is being told, how the food story is being told, where people like dietitians can source information and find it from those of us with firsthand expertise.
Right. Wow. Fascinating. So as we, you know, think about all what's next coming down the road and what topics do you see coming on the horizon soon?
Yeah, so there's a lot of discussion around regenerative versus sustainability. I think you can draw very close parallels.
Very close.
Yes, there's a lot of discussion around global trade. On a positive note, I've seen some really good shifts around the acceptance of GMOs and biotech over the last several years.
That's great to hear.
Yes, it is encouraging. I never thought that I would, but there's increased sensitivity about products that perhaps we don't need to be quite so concerned about from a science standpoint. So going more specifically into the science discussion, I would challenge anyone who hears reports about things like food dyes, seed oils versus tallow, et cetera, to source the information from a scientific entity, because the information that is being fed to us, pun intended, is sometimes disinformation. And disinformation is slightly different than misinformation. Disinformation actually is the intentional proliferation of information that is incorrect about a topic. As an example, the animal rights activists spreading information about livestock producers. That is right. Disinformation. I would make the case that you could probably say the same thing about seed oils. And the other interesting nuance that's really important to understand is that if you hear something about what European policy is, that's not necessarily accurate in the United States, because they have different policies and they name items different names. So that doesn't make it any more superior. And by all means, I'm not saying that the U.S. food system is perfect. There is plenty to be improved on, including in agriculture. And most farmers I know will tell you that. However, the disinformation that is being put out there to the public is a little disheartening, frankly.
Wow. And so we're both parents of young adults. And so I take great hope in their generation of questioning and understanding science. You know, I think about what I learned in my education decades ago and what our young adults are learning. So it does give me hope with all these headwinds, right? With the things, the authenticity.
Yes.
I really like your distinction of dis versus misinformation.
Yes. And if you're interested in that, Connie Diekman, who is a former president of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics, and Dr. Cami Ryan, who is with Bayer Crop Science in Canada, actually have done a number of articles and podcasts. I would encourage you to listen to it. It's brilliant information. But to go back real quick to the critical thinking and the science that you had mentioned for our college age and younger generation, it's really interesting when you look at the brain science of what AI is doing.
The brain science.
So when you look at the effects of what is happening to brains as a result of people using AI.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It actually shows some completely different patterns of the way the brain is used. It's much like social.
Right.
So social media, I think we all know at this point, is perhaps not the best for our attention spans, our focus. And so there's always flip sides to technology.
Right.
We have to remember that. I would really advise young people that are in high school and college to ensure that your critical thinking skills are top notch, because it is going to be even more essential. I mean, I don't know, Kenda, have you seen the images created on social media by AI of these women in bikini tops and bib overalls that are supposedly farmers?
Oh, I actually have a dear friend who posted the farmhouse look, and it's all in white. No farmer and family is ever going to have a white entryway.
Yeah.
Okay, let's just get real. So yeah, it is critical thinking so important. I've even seen that, you know, many teachers are going back to those blue books.
Yes.
Right? Because just to be sure a kid knows how to write and think and put it all together.
Mm-hmm.
So thank goodness we have people like you out there helping people with that, helping people tell their stories, be authentic, and really just making the connection.
Yeah.
So much is important about making connections.
It takes every voice.
It does. Well, we have to take a quick break, and a shout out to our friends at Farm Bureau for being a sponsor of this podcast, but we'll be right back.
A healthy company is a blessing, but a well-insured company is a necessity. That's why Indiana Farm Bureau offers more affordable health plans for eligible members. Whether you have just a handful of employees or a larger enterprise, building a stable business demands employees who are just as strong and healthy. Indiana Farm Bureau can help with health plans that include medical, dental, vision, and Medicare supplement insurance plans. And you can sign up for membership and apply for an Indiana Farm Bureau health plan any time of year. Indiana Farm Bureau understands the cost of healthcare has rapidly become one of the largest expenses for many small businesses. we invite you to compare our health plans to your current coverage. We're confident you could find significant savings. To learn more about the health plan that's right for you, visit infbhealthplans.com and make the switch today.
Well, welcome back. And we could just talk all day because we're both just fascinated by this topic of food and people and understanding and, you know, thinking through generationally, if you will, about all the different organizations that have been in this business a long time, our new startups, many of the groups that work with AgriNovus. There are so many different players now. How would you, and of course, we're all thinking about the public court of public opinion, right? As you've talked about in many ways, you know, how would you compare several decades of your career, if you will, way back in the FFA days to today, kind of how we're all evolving and just kind of how it all comes together?
Well, it's interesting because I think when you look at the issues today, there's a lot of big picture issues. In addition to we have a lawyer making decisions on behalf of our business that's a little concerning. We have people at a national level that perhaps don't have the familiarity of science in agriculture, food, and health. But then when I think here to Indiana, I live in Boone County. 10,000 acres of prime farmland have been threatened to be taken out of production. I have an ethical issue with that. And when I look nationwide at the hundreds of thousand acres of farmland that have been lost, I have to question where the future of our country is. Because if we can't grow food, we have no national security. It's as simple as that. And then, you know, the big picture of the average age of the American farmer is 58 years old. We all know that farmland transition is a major threat to our business over the next two decades.
It's going to be monumental.
It is. And then you look at all the technology that's happening and the really cool things. I mean, I never thought I'd saw a robot milk a cow.
Right.
And when you look at what drones are doing and what some of the field technologies are doing, it's absolutely amazing. But there's case study after case study of us losing our tools to best produce food because of the courtroom of public opinion. And then I look at some of the other big picture things such as food insecurity. I am deeply passionate about providing food for people, especially young people. And the fact of the matter is, according to USDA and the Economic Research Service, food insecurity, particularly amongst children, is increasing since 2020.
Wow. So that infamous COVID time has kind of set us on a path.
Yes. And then I had mentioned earlier mental health, because agriculture, unfortunately, is one of the leading sectors for death by suicide. And I've been writing some pieces recently around youth in rural areas. And youth in rural areas are 60% more likely to experience depression, anxiety, or suicide than their urban counterparts.
Which is so surprising.
And terrifying. Yes. And so there's myriad issues that are happening that are very big picture issues. And we can get into some of the more nuanced ones. But when I think about what's been going on, clearly MAHA and everything that's happening in D.C. is having a significant impact. The lack of the farm bill.
Right.
Has affected us all. Yes, exactly. And then the shifting international markets, which seem to be largely unknown, and tariffs and all of that. So there's many issues that are happening. And what I try to do is focus on the ones where I really feel like I can make an impact. And kudos to the people that are out there in policy that are working at the federal and the state level.
Right.
I know that's not my gift. My gift is being able to work with people to better communicate the science of our business. And also on the mental health piece, be able to raise the familiarity and normalize the conversation that we have around our stress and our inability to manage stress in agriculture.
And that actually, I like that, what you've just said there in terms of managing the stress, because you're passionate, but there's so much emotion. And when people are emotional, they're stressed, they're seeing family farms go away, they're seeing land being scooped up. How do you kind of balance the emotional responses when you're working with people versus helping them find their voice?
I think it's a deeply personal business, and we have to acknowledge that. So you're talking from the advocacy
right.
side. not the mental health, correct?
Right.
Okay. So from the advocacy side, what I always try to do is encourage people to take it off of emotional center. So let's talk biotechnology as an example, not exactly the least contentious issue that is out there, but there have been improvements that have been made. And when I go and I work with dietetic audiences, typically half of them dislike my stance on GMOs. I adamantly believe that farmers have the opportunity and ability and right to plant whatever they see fit, as well as farm whatever they see fit, and the best practice. And by the way, that means I also support my friends that farm organically.
Right.
It's a personal choice
for a farm family.
But on the GMO front, dietitians often will come up and question me or try to correct my thinking. And this is what I say to most all of them. Do you have anybody in your family who's diabetic?
And odds are pretty good they do.
Yes. And my daughter's godfather happens to be severely diabetic. He would not be alive if it were not for GMOs. Because you see, all of the insulin he takes is created through bioengineered bacterium, which is far more consistent than the insulin that used to be produced by pigs.
Right.
And that immediately takes it off of emotional center, because I have found in some cases when you can take topics from food and you can relate them to health in a globally accepted way, then there's not the questions about farming. One of the challenges that we have is that few people have set foot on a farm.
Right.
And I know that my friends are never going to understand what it feels like to pull a calf. They're never going to understand what it feels like to have to make a decision to do something to an animal that looks incredibly cruel, but is in their best interest. I understand they're never going to see that or do that. So if I can explain it to them in a way that they can relate to, such as GMOs and health are amazing. I mean, you want to talk about innovation, and I will try not to go off on this, but one of the degrees my daughter is graduating with at the University of Georgia is regenerative bioscience, and it's the intersection of animal science and health science.
How cool.
It is amazing, and they're working on things such as curing Parkinson's. They just announced a new product yesterday that will help with traumatic brain injuries.
Wow.
And they're using pigs.
And they're using pigs.
It's really cool science. So if you are a scientist, if you work in the innovation space, please, please tell your story. So few people understand the hardcore science of our business, and they're terrified. Right?
Yeah. What we don't understand, we tend to push away.
Exactly. And my experience with food bullying, which is also science building, is what you don't know, you don't trust, and therefore you're disconnected. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real challenge. And the one counsel that I would offer is do not data dump. Don't puke science on people's shoes.
Right. Just don't do it.
Yes. Offer the personal stories. Offer the personal perspective.
Right. Well, you develop many resources to help people do that, which is amazing. And you now have you've written several books. I know I've read them. I have them. But your book, Science Story Speak, that's a lot of S's.
Yes.
What prompted you to write this book, and what can readers expect from it?
So Science Story Speak is actually my fourth book, and books really are not that hard to write, I promise you. What prompted me to write it was a deep frustration. And mind you, we started writing, I think, 4 years ago, a deep frustration that both Amy Hayes, my co-author, and I have with people's inability to understand science. And what we did, it's a workbook, and there's a correlated training that we actually have done in California and Texas, and Indiana NRCS has talked about bringing us in and so forth. So it's a great opportunity to work through how to connect science on a more meaningful level. So there's things such as generational IQ, looking at the neuroscience of how people accept information about modern day farming techniques, and really how, as a scientist or as a business trying to connect with farmers, how to be able to connect science in a more meaningful way.
How useful, because again, we're such a science hub here in Indiana with some major global headquarters doing great things in all kinds of things, crop chemicals, animals, all the things. That's going to be so useful. Where can we get it, and is it available now?
It is available now, and you can get it at causematters.com. It is available on Amazon, but it is not the spiral version. And if you're in Canada, you're listening, you do need to order it through Amazon. But if you go to causematters.com, you can find it there.
Fantastic. And so again, you don't seem to stop, again, including heifers, which we hope she's still taking care of things up there. But what's ahead? What comes next?
That's a great question. So I would say collaboration seems to be the theme of the game. I've worked with a lot of different people and I'm moving into some different spaces, both communications as well as science communications. And you never know. You know, I've been an entrepreneur for 24 years. And so I'm open to new adventures. And my husband and I love seeing the world. And we now have a little bit more time to do that as empty nesters. So definitely some international travel. But I always love to connect with people, both in Indiana and around the world.
I love going to grocery stores. When I was just in Canada recently. And just it's fascinating, right, to connect over food.
Fun fact. I use technology when I grocery shop. I try really hard not to set foot in a grocery store.
Really?
It makes me angry.
I bet it might.
Because all the misinformation and disinformation. So I love food and I actually am much more likely to go in other countries.
But
in the States, I nearly always pick up my grocery orders. And you can find really cool things online, actually, I've discovered.
Yeah. I like the efficiency, too.
Amen.
That's pretty handy.
Yes.
That is great. Sure. Well, wonderful. Well, I think it's about time for us to wrap up. But thank you so much for your time and expertise and honestly for what you do every day. Because
if
we're not telling our story, who's going to?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me.
And that's it for us today on this episode of Ag Bioscience. Keep telling your story.
Ag Bioscience is a podcast by Agrinovis Indiana, produced by Kayla Chittister and Fabian Rodriguez, edited by Mike Fisher. Photography and design by Kaylee Verstee. Video by Darren Cooper and 1898 Creative. If you like today's episode, subscribe, rate, and review so we can bring you more conversations just like this. Get all episodes of Ag Bioscience at agrinovisindiana.com.